So this is a podcast, which means for a lot of you, you don't get a chance to see us.
That's why you should follow us on Instagram. I'm at Gittimer. Jen is at Jen in any minute, all one word.
We post pictures of our travel, behind the scenes of the podcast, and of course, sales wisdom. If you're not on Instagram, we just gave you one great reason to join.
So follow us today, and you might get a shout out on our next Motivation Monday show.
At Gittimer, at Jen in any minute, we'll see you on the gram.
Is gram one of those words that if you're cool, you use gram instead of Instagram?
Now it is. I would say we'll see you on Insta.
Yeah, I would say gram. You say Insta, I say gram.
Success is largely a matter of hanging on after others have let go. And so, I'm going to attribute this wrong possibly, but I think the actor Will Smith, you know, he says, look, there are people that are smarter than me. There are people that are better than me, but I'll just outwork you.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. This is Sell or Die, the only sales podcast on the planet that isn't afraid to say you're either selling or you're dying, because there's no second place in sales. Win or go hungry. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gleckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And today we are going to help you sell like hell.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a great guest coming up, but first, we want to introduce you to the one, the only, our man behind the curtain, behind the glass wall.
Wait, it's a glass window.
What? You know, it's a metaphor here. It's okay. Our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. I want to remind everyone they can subscribe to this podcast and share it with their friends on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die and make sure to leave us a review. We always love getting feedback from the diehards out there.
Five stars or nothing.
That's
Doug
right.
Doug sounds amazing on the mic.
We're the Uber of podcasts. We want a five-star rating.
Except we don't rate you. You only rate us. And don't forget to join us for Motivation Mondays, our live sales meeting on Facebook.com/Jeffrey Gittimer. We put on the podcast feed as well. But if you join us live on Facebook, you get to see us, interact with us, engage with us, ask us questions, or just say hello.
Okie dokie. Let's get to the rest of the show. It's time to sell or die. Jason Hartman is the founder of Platinum Properties Investor Network, the Hartman Media Company, and Jason Hartman Foundation. While Jason was still in college, he embarked on a career in real estate while brokering properties for clients while still investing in his own portfolio. Today, he can add one more accomplishment to his list, and that is joining the Sell or Die Network. Diehards,
yes.
Say hello to the great Jason Hartman.
Well, hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you? Jason, you're now in Palm Beach, Florida.
Yes.
Which we discussed the difference between Palm Beach and West Palm Beach.
Yes.
What you may not know is that I was born in West Palm Beach.
Ah, there we go.
At St. Mary's Hospital, which is
about your neighborhood.
At the St. Mary's Hospital, which is still there. Because it was a long, long, long time ago. But there's definitely – people don't understand the difference between Palm Beach and West Palm Beach, only separated by the inland waterway.
Right, right, right. And there are some very nice areas of West Palm Beach, but a lot of it still has a ways to go, I'd say. But Palm Beach is extremely exclusive. I mean, that is
– your best job there is being a gardener.
Or an interior designer or something.
Yeah.
And that's where, of course, the famous or infamous, depending on how you look at it, Mar-a-Lago is. Trump's golf, or not golf club, but social club. And so pretty cool. I hear that when he became president, the memberships to Mar-a-Lago sold out immediately. And they're up to like, I don't know if you could get one, you know, $300,000-$400,000 now or something like that.
Wow. So. That's crazy. So was there an intrigue in your life that said, hey, I have to start investing in real estate? What happened there?
Yeah, there was. And it was, I grew up poor and I didn't like being poor very much. By the time I got to about ninth grade, I really realized that all the cute girls in junior high school were hanging out with the rich kids. And so I didn't like being part of the poor group very much. And so, about a year later, when I was 16 years old, I saw an infomercial, one of those, you know, somewhat sleazy infomercials, maybe. Mm-hmm. For a real estate guru, and I got his book, and I read exactly
Carlton Sheets.
No, that was before Carlton Sheets. It was Robert Allen.
Oh yeah, I know him.
And yeah, I know him too. And I'm not saying anything bad about him. No. But I'm just saying the game. Look, everybody, I don't have to explain it. And I got his book. I read three chapters of it. I put it down, and my mom picked it up. And, you know, I was only 16, so I didn't finish anything at that age. And my mom picked it up and she read it all and got really interested and inspired, started going to real estate seminars for the next 2 years. And by the time I was 18, just about to graduate from high school, she says, Jason, you know, you got me into this real estate investing stuff. There's a seminar this weekend by Disneyland in Anaheim. Why don't you go? So, Jeff, I rounded up 9 of my friends from high school because I couldn't do anything alone at that age. And I got them all to go to the seminar. And the first night, all of them were there. By Saturday morning, all but one, myself and one other, had gone to the beach. My friend Rich Guttenberg stuck around, and he got through Saturday with me. Then he disappeared, and I'm the only one that got through the whole weekend through Sunday. And I thought, this is the thing. I got to do it. And so I immediately on Monday morning, I thought, you know, I remember Earl Nightingale saying, and he used real estate as an example.
Always.
It was a metaphor for anything, but mm-hmm. he did use real estate.
It was something that everyone could identify with.
Definitely, definitely. And you know, I'm sure you remember because you were a big follower of his too. And he said, if you want to get rich in real estate, just learn the business first. Mm-hmm. And so I enrolled in real estate school just to learn the trade. And by the time I was 19, my first year of college, I started working at Century 21 2 weeks before my 20th birthday. My first full month in the business, I sold 5 houses. And you know what I realized, Jeff, and you teach a lot of this stuff in your great training, is that, you know, so few salespeople, oddly, are actually working. You know, they think they're working. They fooled themselves into believing that they're working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I owned a traditional real estate agency that I later sold to Coldwell Banker, you know, I called it the country club job because people would sort of come in, have coffee, talk to people, socialize. Maybe they'd get their car washed. They'd run a couple of errands. And like, that's my day of working.
And talk to a few people and push a deal a little bit closer and done.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the first rule of successful sales is working. I'd say.
You sounds work crazy, but it's true.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
People go home and they'll drink a beer and watch television instead of improve their LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And then wonder why they have a hard time getting leads.
You got it.
And the answer is you have a hard time working.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. Yeah. It's an amazing truth. You know, I think it was good old Tom Hopkins who said sales is the highest paid hard work and the lowest paid easy work there is, right?
He was also a real estate investor.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
His whole deal was having a real estate success.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
And he became a master of sales by making 100,000, 200,000, 500,000 sales on his own.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the whole real estate industry used him for years and years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was sort of the poster child, you know, for old-fashioned sales training. I mean,
yeah, good old-fashioned.
Good old-fashioned stuff. I mean, the stuff you teach is, I'll say it, more high-tech, maybe.
Well, it's available online. It's available on demand. And, you know, it's available in any media. So,
But also the philosophy, you know, behind your programs is just, you know, it's modernized.
We'll put yes. But it still boils down to be ethical, do what your mom taught you to do, mm-hmm. Follow up with people, make relationships. I mean, there's nothing – wait, make relationships? Go back. Tell me about that. No, it's pretty much common sense. but hard work.
Right. Yep.
And most salespeople are not willing to do the hard work that it takes to make selling easy.
I'm Jeremy Fulkerson, and I host the Hidden Stories podcast on the Sell or Die Network. In our podcast, we share stories of seemingly everyday people that are your neighbors, community leaders, entrepreneurs, survivors, mothers, fathers, and friends, but we don't share the regular dinner talk conversations. I believe we all want to be better spouses, friends, parents, and leaders. My hope is by hearing these hidden stories, it will give you the courage to be a better you. Find me on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. There are links in the show notes to subscribe.
So now you're in real estate, and you started at a very young age. You became successful pretty easy. Was there a hard part?
Oh, there have been a few slumps and a few hard parts. And, you know, one of the things that I've really learned from the slumps and the hard times is a saying that I believe I may have come up with, or maybe I don't even know that I got it somewhere else.
Start it. If I can finish it, it's not yours.
Yeah, exactly. Go for it. Yeah.
What is it?
It is action eliminates doubt. You know, whenever I've been in a slump or a hard time in my career, I simply, in my old-fashioned real estate business, traditional real estate, you know, get on the phone or knock on doors. And nowadays, my company serves investors worldwide, and we help them invest nationwide. And just action eliminates doubt. You know, so many people become paralyzed by, you know, their slumps. And everybody's going to have a slump. You know, none of us have a consistent business ever. There's little ups and downs, right? And it's a little bit of a roller coaster, if not a big one. And you know, the thing to do is just get out there. Take some action. And it is so reaffirming, because people, your own prospects and customers mostly, will reaffirm you. You know, they'll say, oh yeah, hey Jason, you know, I know you, and you know, whenever we're ready, we're gonna give you a call or use you or whatever. And sometimes they won't, and sometimes they don't know you, but most people are nice to you, and it's just reaffirming when you take some action, you know?
I think you're dealing with people with money. And those people tend to be more sophisticated in the way they communicate, mm-hmm. and quirky. Mm-hmm. I'll just say quirky. That's a nice way of describing them.
Yeah, quirky, sure.
So, yes. And a lot of people, when they're in doubt or fear, get paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And so I love this theory of just take action. Like, yeah. do something. Even if you do the wrong thing, you'll figure that out along the way.
Absolutely.
But you know, step forward, not to the side.
So what's an example of something like that that you've done where you've proven this theory out?
Yeah. Well, you know, in my old business, simply calling people, prospecting, knocking on doors, good old-fashioned things like that. And like I said, it was so reaffirming, because people would say, oh yeah, we know you, you know, we get your mailers. When we're ready, we're definitely going to call you. And that is very reaffirming. And in my business today, you know, since I'm not a salesperson directly anymore, I manage salespeople. I teach them this stuff. I tell them this stuff, you know, a lot of your techniques in there from the Little Red Book. I love the microphone wind screens you've got, the red one.
Oh yeah, we don't mess around.
Yeah.
And that's great. You know, any of those things, you just gotta, you know, make some contacts.
Yeah.
Deal with some people, reach out to some people, call them on the phone. Always have, every day of one's career should have some action phone calls, some proactive things that they do that just, you know, constantly grease the skids.
Mm-hmm. So now you've grown into an investor relations person. Can you tell me, and this is, I think it's a pretty important step, how you were able to gain the confidence of investors to put their money in your hands?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Long-term thinking, first off. Giving first, and invoking the law of tenfold returns, the biblical law. And, you know, one of the ways I do this is on my podcast. You do it on yours as well. And I've been podcasting now for almost 15 years. So I was one of the...
Whoa, you were podcasting before it was a podcast.
You must have started when you were 7.
What'd you call it?
I was 8, actually. No, the Creating Wealth Show. But I was podcasting in the early days, you know, when people didn't know what a podcast was. And, you know, that just that long-term thinking of just putting content out there, content marketing, and giving information for free, it just comes back to you. It's a wonderful
thing. Being a resource where people know your name. So if you're asking somebody for $100,000 or $1 million, they know you.
Right.
They have confidence in you as a person, and they will then take a look at your investment opportunity.
Absolutely.
If they don't know you, they don't care whether you live or die.
Yeah, right. They got to know you. They got to know you. And the other thing is the idea that, you know, a lot of salespeople over the years that, you know, I've trained, they always ask me, you know, for sales and marketing, how can I stand out? What can I do to make myself different?
Mm-hmm.
And I say this, if you want to be different, be consistent. Because so few people are actually consistent. The consistency is what creates trust in the mind of the prospect or the mind of the customer. By being consistent and being there over and over again, it just creates this level of trust. We call it the trust bank account. You know, you make deposits in that trust bank account. And then you get to make withdrawals.
Yeah, and don't mess with that money until it's time.
Right.
So it's a pretty hard concept, though, for most salespeople because, like, real estate sales do take time. I get that. And there are many sales that do take time. But as a salesperson, I want my commission right now. Right. I want to make the sale right now. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the ways that you help your salespeople realize that this is more of a long-term game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the old parable of the tortoise and the hare. You know, you've got to, there really is no get rich quick scheme.
No. But how much is it? I was going to say, how long did it take for the tortoise to actually win the race? That's the challenge.
Well, there are quite a few of them here in Florida. So.
Oh yeah. They're in the middle of the road there. People eat them.
We can actually measure that.
But you look at it from the perspective of you're trying to convince someone that their 9 or 10 or 15% return, I'm assuming you're collecting money that you use as a mortgage and make people partners in the deal for businesses that you acquire. Is that true?
Well, we don't do that. We just help people do direct investment. We don't do any kind of pooled money stuff. So we just help people buy their own properties and we help people.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. One of the things I really like is I like the philosophy of being a direct investor. And so we teach people and empower them to be good direct investors. So, you know, I have this 10 commandments of successful investing. And commandment number 3 has been very popular. It has resonated with a lot of people. And it's thou shalt maintain control. Meaning be a direct investor. Invest in things that you own and control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you do that, you're not leaving yourself susceptible to 3 major problems. You know, number 1, you might be investing with a crook. Number 2, you might be investing with an idiot. And assuming they're honest and competent, and they're not Bernie Madoff, you know, they take a huge management fee off the top for managing the deal. Hmm. And this mostly compares what we do to Wall Street. And I think that income property is really the most historically proven asset class out there.
I agree. I'll share something with you. My main mentor in life lived in Miami mm-hmm. Beach, and all he did was invest in income-generating properties, commercial. Yeah. And he and his partner had a formula for how they would buy a warehouse or how they would buy an apartment building, and the formula involved so much money in cash and so much return. Mm-hmm. And if it didn't meet the formula, they didn't do it.
Yeah.
But they owned it. They didn't like, they weren't a partner with anybody. They would just buy it lock, stock, and barrel.
Right. Yeah.
I'm assuming that's what you do as well. You advise people to do that?
we advise people on their investments. And then, of course, I also am, you know, quite an investor on my own from my own account.
Mm-hmm.
But the business helps other people, helps the public invest. And, you know, we get the vast majority of those through the podcast. And you know, like in your little red book, you talk about, you know, it's about value. It's about, mm-hmm. all about the relationship, not about the price. And so, you know, we just try to give them a lot of value for free first, and then they come to us and they raise their hand. And, you know, that's what you got to do as a salesperson. You know, farm your people, you know, send them articles, send them resources, share things with them, let them know you're thinking about them. The only get rich quick thing in sales or investments or anything is a boiler room operation. You know, it's the Wolf of Wall Street. Okay.
Yeah, a bad wolf.
Yeah, you don't want to be there.
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? So, anybody with money.
So if I'm in a diehard with disposable income and I'm looking for a place to park my cash, what's a typical or minimum dollar investment that you recommend?
About $25,000 to do it with us.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can buy one property.
And what does that get you? Like, what for $25,000, what is the typical return?
It'll get you a decent house in a B-class neighborhood, not an A-class, but a B-class, not a C-class that's really, you know, crappy, or a D-class. And typically, the overall return on that investment, because it's leveraged and you have this, what I call a multi-dimensional asset class that creates your return, it'll be over 20% annually. But of course, you know, nothing's guaranteed. The market changes. Sometimes renters don't pay their rent.
Well, really?
Imagine that. I know. And sometimes you have to evict them, and sometimes they thrash your house, and you got to do fix up too. But, you know, over time, we found that income is pretty reliable. Investing for income, investing for appreciation, not very reliable, not very reliable. And so so that's the difference. You know, it's about the slow process of earning an annual return,
mm-hmm.
not about, you know, buying a house, selling it, and making $30,000 if
flipping
you're
it, as it right, were, in the, right. in the marketplace.
You know, what I've always found, it's interesting about that, is, you know, I've done many flips in my career, mm-hmm. and I've watched many other people do lots of flips, much more than I have. The people who flip, they have spending money, but the people who buy and hold, they have real wealth.
That's interesting.
Spending money ain't bad, but real wealth is better.
Right, right.
I think it's important to note that if you're looking at the real estate marketplace, there's what do you want to own yourself and live in, and what do you want to use that might produce income for you?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we're very fortunate in that I have invested in real estate a long time ago here in our building in Charlotte, North Carolina, but we occupy everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it we pay rent to ourselves, but the bottom line is that it's a great valued asset that
right.
anyone who's out there in real estate land needs to contact Jason to make sure that they're at least doing the right thing.
Right, right.
Because you bet $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 of your own money, mm-hmm. you better be on the right side of the roulette wheel.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the one thing we can definitely say for sure, it will never go to zero.
Right. Yeah. People still need a place to live.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just like hinted at ups and downs in real estate, and I think we're all aware that there are definitely ups and downs. What do you do during a down economy? We always talk about, you know, not blaming the economy, not, you know, whatever, but how do you maintain and excel when the market is sort of against you?
Right, right. Well, the market is never against you for very long. You know, there are up cycles and down cycles. If you're a salesperson, you know, there are times when people are buying more and buying less, but there's always an equalizing factor. For example, if you're in real estate and the market turns into a buyer's market where properties are sitting on the market and not selling, typically that will cause other competitors of yours to get out of the business.
Mm.
And it'll cause them to pull in their horns and spend less money on advertising and marketing. If they have staff, they'll cut staff, right? And so the part in the economy that always kills people is the adjustment phase. And that's usually in pretty much anything, it's about a year or two. And then the equalizing factor comes into play. But at first, there will be that part where things have gotten bad, things have gotten slow, and then, you know, you've still got just as much competition as you had the day before that happened, right? And so that'll last for a while. But, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, success is largely a matter of hanging on after others have let go. And so, I'm going to attribute this wrong possibly, but I think the actor Will Smith, he says, look, there are people that are smarter than me. There are people that are better than me, but I'll just outwork you.
I 1,000% agree with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The hardest working people somehow get a job done and somehow end up with a pocket full of money.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So you know what my saying is? What? I'll just outlast you. I'll just outlast you because I'm so absurdly consistent and, ridiculously tenacious that, I'll just outlast it.
So it's funny. I did consulting in textile screen printing, we would go into a factory and have to rearrange the factory in a weekend. And we worked so hard that CEOs would say, okay, you're outworking me. Just do whatever you want and I'll accept it. And when that happens, it's a whole other relationship. You know, they've shown you their respect by just stepping aside.
It's a proof of concept. You've proven to them. Yeah.
Right. I'm sure people go to you and go, hey, Jason, I need this and I'm willing to stand aside. Just go do it.
Yeah, right.
Earn your fee and leave me alone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That is the way you prove it to them. And, when times are bad, quote unquote bad, because I don't think there really are any bad times. There are little adjustment times that are kind of bad, but they always equalize. There's always an equalizing factor. When there are down cycles, that's the time to increase your market share because you really find that it becomes like this open playing field. You know, when times are good and the money's flowing and the sales are flowing,
prices are up. Yeah.
Everybody in the world is getting into your business, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. If it's auto sales, real estate sales, it doesn't matter. Any industry, stockbroker, whatever it is. Everybody is coming into your business and there's all these newbies that, that just come to seek the gold at the end of the rainbow.
Who think they're smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool. I like that.
I think that if you have cash in a shit market, that's the time to spend it.
Hey, that's why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, right? Because the rich have money or they're just there. 80% of success is showing up, right? They're just there. When nobody else is there, right? They're either there with cash or they're with effort, either way, right?
Well, they're prepared with money. My statement has always been show up prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys have a checkbook.
Yeah.
And when they write it, it clears.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's happening now? We're in a boom economy. What are you doing?
Well, the economy is changing, I think. I don't know, it is really changing. I think that the economy is on the verge of a bit of a shift here. Certainly, we've seen that in the stock market recently, and certainly we've seen it in the real estate market. And Trump might be right that the Fed is taking away the punch bowl, and they don't want people to get too drunk on these low interest rates. So we shall see how it all plays out. But I think we're in for a bit of a landing here. I think it'll be fairly soft. I'm not saying it's anything significant, but times they are changing a bit.
I heard a thing this morning that car sales are up, and that this holiday season will be the best season in the history of America. So there's definitely two sides to what's happening right now in the economy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't know auto sales were up. I haven't followed that, but that kind of surprises me actually. But that's good news. Yeah.
I think it depends on what news station you follow. But
well, yeah, that's true. There are definitely people.
There's
that are
different sides to every story. It seems.
Sure. I didn't realize the world was such a shithole until I listened to a couple of news reports.
Oh man! All right, but this is pretty cool.
Doom and gloom sells.
It does.
It does.
It does. Especially on the 6 o'clock news.
Am I right that you started your real estate business at 19?
Yes. Wow. 2 weeks before my 20th birthday, I was in my first year of college and I started selling real estate for Century 21. And, you know, I found it was a lot easier than everybody in my office told me.
You know, I'll tell you, I went to college with a kid named Lewis Ross, and Lewis was a friend of mine from New Jersey, but we both attended Temple University. In fact, I used to take him to school every day. And he was in real estate in high school, knew that real estate was going to be his vocation, and had completed this home sale before he graduated from high school and made whatever the commission was. It was a lot of money. And he knew where he was going. He knew that real estate was his life and his venture, and saw both the profit side of it and the cash side of it.
Right.
So I have two questions based on this knowledge. Number one, what do you recommend to a 19-year-old who is just starting out and wants to get into real estate?
Maybe even a 20-year-old.
Or any type of sales position.
Right, right. Well, I would first recommend you've got to establish a foundational philosophy for life. And I know this is going to sound extremely general, but Jeff and I are big fans of some of the great, we'll call them success or business philosophers out there, Earl Nightingale, you know, Dennis Waitley, Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn. Only one of them is still with us, and that's Dennis. And, you know, this just sort of real kind of foundational core philosophy, I think, is very important. Og Mandino had some great material. Of course, yours truly, the host of this show, not yours truly, but Jeff, has some great material. And study all of this stuff. Become a sponge for knowledge and really just learn. Learn how to sell and really understand the process. There's a technique to it, like anything. You know, it's not just gift of gab. It's understanding, you know, how to discipline oneself, or as you say, kick your own ass, and you know, how to create a network and value that network, and how that network is going to create a lot of income, and how to be, you know, how to differentiate yourself in the marketplace. I mean, these are all very important things. So
fundamentals, though. They're fundamentals.
Fundamental things. I am always listening to audiobooks. My car is a rolling university. You know, I'm walking the dog. I've got the earbud in my ear, and I'm listening to something educational. And it's just incredibly important that, you know, anybody listening become a sponge for knowledge. There's just so much to know in our world. And learning this stuff is not a chore. It's not a job. It's so enriching. It makes you a better person. It's just good.
I want to go back to something that you said at the very beginning of this interview. When you realized that you were going to be in real estate, the first thing you did was enroll in a real estate school so you could learn more about the craft.
Right. Yep.
And learn more about the business. And if salespeople did that, if they took the time to invest their time and their money in themselves, they would end up owning a flock of real estate or a flock of whatever, a flock of sheep if they wanted.
Of whatever they're selling.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
But they don't, they want the shortcut. In my webinar, upcoming webinar, I'm telling people take the long cut. There ain't no shortcut.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, take the long cut. That's a great saying. That's a great way to put it. I love it.
Cool. My second question is, if you were starting out now, what would you do differently?
I do a lot of things differently. The first thing I would do is humble myself more and resign my position as general manager of the university.
Exactly. But you listened to your mom, and I think that was a very important thing.
Yeah. No question about that. But really, you know, I would spend more money on my business, but I would also at the same time be more careful how I spend it. I think salespeople and, you know, business owners have this propensity to fall for the marketing program du jour. You know, whoever walks in the door or rings the phone or sends an email and says, this thing is the thing. And, you know, look, at the fundamentals are the key. You know, just executing those fundamentals. So if you can find tools that help you execute the fundamentals, the thing you learn, I think, by reading or being somewhat familiar with scripture is that human nature has not really changed in 2,500 years. We're still all basically the same people, and we still have the same flaws and beauties. And when you really learn how to sell and relate to people, that's what you're learning. You're learning how to appeal to those things. And if you keep falling for the marketing program du jour, and you get away from the fundamentals, you know, some of those things occasionally work, but you can waste a lot of time and money on those things. Mm-hmm. Practice the fundamentals, and it's a sure thing. You know, you're going to make money doing the fundamentals.
I would bet you. We have not talked about this previously, but I would bet you that if a person decided to read and study Think and Grow Rich, to listen to anything that Earl Nightingale did, especially The Strangest Secret, and the series Direct Line that we talked about before.
Oh yeah.
Listen to the Dennis Waitley cassettes, which are now probably something else on winning.
Right.
And Jim Rohn, The Art of Exceptional Living. If you could study those things, you've just achieved more in 10 hours of your time than you would in 4 hours of college.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
4 years of college.
Way more. But Jeff, you wouldn't have had as much to drink.
Yeah. Right, that's true. That's sure.
Let me tell you what. No matter what you had, you listen to that stuff, you're sober.
And your liver would appreciate it.
Yeah. For sure.
You recognize that you are on a different mission.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
You know, you read certain things or you listen to certain things and they change your way of thinking.
We'll put a link to all of those in the show notes so that you guys can get them. Hey, Jason, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah. The best place is jasonhartman.com. That's jasonhartman.com. And my podcast is there or on any podcast platform. Check out my podcast. Just search my name.
Okay, cool.
We're going to be in South Florida. We will meet at Max's in Meisner Park.
All
and
right.
We will fight over who pays for the chopped salad.
Sounds good to me.
Oh, man. Diehards, thank you for listening to Sell or Die. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. Give it a star on Overcast and tell a friend.
Tell both your friends, just don't tell your competition. You can follow me on Twitter at Gittimer and Jen at Sales in Any Minute.
Send your sales questions to sellordie@gittimer.com. We'll be back next week with Motivation Monday and another amazing guest.
Until then, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And we're reminding you to get out there and sell or die.
Even if your ass falls off. Sell or Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard. And we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.